Rabotai, just one Dibrei Halakha that's connected to the Parasha. We're reading Parashat Ki Tetze. So at the end of the Parasha, we have the mitzvah to eradicate Amalek. So we have a Zachor and we have a Lo Tishkach. It's Zecher Amalek, which is also written at the end of Parashat B'Shalach, where we also see the Inyan of Amalek. So we had a question that we discussed yesterday in the Halakha regarding, is it mandatory to destroy the assets of Amalek? Can we benefit from the assets of Amalek? The question has modern application, because there is a tradition from the Gaon Mevilna that the Germans are descendants of Amalek, Nabedin of Amalek. Chaim Sonnenfeld, Alav Shalom, was the Rav in Yerushalayim, when the premier of Germany, or the king Wilhelm, Shem Yerushalayim Yirkav, came to Yerushalayim, many of the tzaddikim went out to make the beracha of the Melech. Chaim Sonnenfeld did not go out. He said, this is Zera Amalek, and therefore will not go out to greet him. That's the tradition he had from the Gaon. So that's the case, if that tradition is true. So then, after the war, the Germans made reparations to the Jewish people. And the question was a big controversy, are the Jews allowed to accept these reparations? If it's considered Amalek, and you're taking assets of Amalek. So what is the deen on this? It's interesting that Rabbeinu Bachya in Bishalach, he writes that we're not allowed to have any hana'ah from any of the assets of Amalek, not only the behemot, but all the shalal is forbidden. Cannot have any connection to them. And that's the way he explains in Megillat Esther that when Mordechai went and fought against Amalek, right? But Biza lo shalechu et yadam. Why didn't take the Biza? Because Bizat Amalek. Bizat Amalek is Asur. And Mordechai was following the the halakha. And that's why Shaul HaMelech got punished, because he took the shalah. So if the Rabbeinu Bachya is certain and clear that there is an Isur. Problem is that Harambam, when he talks about the mitzvah to eradicate Amalek, makes no mention in Hilchot Melachim of this Isur of, you know, banning the assets. Makes no mention of it. He says Zachor, Lotishkah, and so on and so forth. Furthermore, we have a story in the Navi in Shemuel Aleph, where David, before he was the king, where he went out and it says he went and fought some Amalekim, and he took their camels, and he took their flock, and their sheep. So David knows the halakha, and here he took it. Not only that, but if you go to Megillat Esther itself, at the end of Megillat Esther, it says, V'taseh Mamelech Esther et Bet Haman de Mordechai. That Esther gave Mordechai Bet Haman. What does it mean, Bet Haman? The assets of Haman. That's the Gemara Megillah Daf Yud. Clearly says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his infinite Hashkaha gives money to a Rasha in order that one day that money of the Rasha will go to the Tzaddik. Who's the Rasha? The Haman. Who's the Tzaddik? Mordechai. Where do you see he got the money of Haman? Batasem Esther. So you see that Mordechai took the money of Haman. Clearly Haman is from Amalek. So that is the question. So the famous Meshech Chochmah, Meir Simcha Kohen Medvinsk, that wants to make a differentiation, he wants to make a chiluk. He wants to say, when is it forbidden to benefit from the assets of Amalek? So that's only when it's a sibur. However, an individual, a yahid, it's permissible. So therefore, it answers all the cases. Shaul HaMelech was representing the Sibur, so therefore it was forbidden. When Mordechai at Tzaddik was going out to fight Amalek as for the nation, that's a din of Sibur. However, when it comes to Esther giving Mordechai Bet Haman, that's a yan of Yahid. David in that case was not the king when he went to was fighting with Amalek, he was an individual, therefore he was able to keep the Shalat. So therefore we make a chidu. According to that, reparations that are given by the Amalekim should be permissible. The Yahidim, when I don't have a king, we didn't have any, they were giving out to individuals. And therefore, those poskim wanted to say that even if you want to say that the Germans have a din of Amalek, but we weren't taking it as a sibud, this wasn't a king like we have Shaul, everybody was taking it, you know, whoever they were, was able to get it back, whatever, which really was their money. Yeah. But nonetheless, they made yush on it, so therefore taking it back would be a problem, but the poskim said it's okay. There is another answer by the Onig Yom Tov. The Onig Yom Tov in his Hakdama, he said that what's the reason why you have to get rid of the assets of Amalek? Because we don't want to have a zikr. We don't want anybody to say, oh, this is the asset of Amalek. As long as you have to get rid of the memory of Amalek. So part of the way you get rid of it is that nobody can say, oh, this came from Amalek. So he said, but that only applies when there's no more Amalekim in the world. But if there's still Amalekim in the world, so then what's the difference getting rid of the asset? There's still Amalek in the world. You're going to remember him anyway. Shaul killed all the Amalekim. And Agag, he intended to kill the next day. So they had a hayuf to take the assets. In David's case, there were still many Amalekim. And really, he says, in Shaul, in Shaul's case, it was Hayav. In Mordechai, when it says, Babizal lo shalchu et yadam, he says, that wasn't Menadin. That was to make a tikkun on Shaul HaMelech. Because it was his grandfather. He made a tikkun. His father, his grandfather took the shalal. So Mordechai wanted to make a tikkun, but not because it was min hadin. And therefore, Vatasa Mister Bet Aman, give it to Mordechai, because there was still Amalekim that was still around. In any event, according to the Onig Yom Tov, be permissible to take the reparations itself. But the Hiddush over here is from the Hashkafa. Hashkafa is that many Jews, although they were able to take it halachically, did not want to take it hashkafically. Why? Because they felt that by taking the reparations of war to the Germans, now you're giving them a clear conscience. As if to say, we paid you. We killed 6 million Jews, but we gave you a few Mercedes-Benz, we gave you a few German-made products, we gave you $2, okay, we're even. You know, we killed, we paid, and then let's call it a day. They didn't want to give the Germans that satisfaction. Ki'ilu, you could be mechaper for a few dollars, the great atrocities that took place. So from a hashkafic standpoint, which is interesting, there's a precedent to that hashkafa. When the Jewish people were leaving Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says, God says to Moshe, Daber na elaam, speak to the people, and v'yish'alu ish me'et re'ehu k'dechesef u'chle zahav. The Gemara says in Berachot, en na ela lashon bakasha. God says to Moshe, plead with the people to take the money of the Egyptians. The Mefarshim say, plead to take money? You have to plead to part with money. You don't have to plead to tell anybody to take money, especially the Jews who are working for 200 years. Plus, there's a lot of back pay that the Egyptians owed them. Now they're just taking what belongs to them. Why would God say, Daber na? And the explanation is because the Jews in Mitzrayim had the same mentality. They said, we don't want to take their money because if we take their money, it clears their conscience. As if to say, yeah, we tortured them for 200 years, we paid them a few bucks on the way out, we're even. And then with this blood money, let them suffer for it. We don't want them to have a chance to say we got kapara by giving us. That's why God had to say, Daber na, enna el lashon bakasha. I promised Abraham Abinu that they're going to get the money. Therefore, they have to overcome that feeling. But you see, that feeling existed in the times of Germany as well. Last but not least, we said a very, very, very strong hashkafa that I saw brought down by Rabbi Avigdor Nebensal, Alav Shalom, Rosh Yeshivat, HaKotel, and the great rabbi of the Old City, and Yerushalayim. Anybody ever saw Rabbi Avigdor Nebensal walk in the Old City of Yerushalayim? He was Talet Tefillin the whole day. He's always reading Mishnayot. He was Ish Kadosh, one of the top students of Hashom Zaman, Orabach, Alav Shalom. And Rabbi Avigdor writes an unbelievable derash where he says that according to Shitat HaRambam, were allowed to accept converts from Amalek. Very interesting. We also brought a ra'ayah from a Gemara. The Gemara says in Yitin Daf Nun Zayin, "Bebnei Banav Shel Haman Lemedu Torah Bebnei Berak," that the grandchildren of Haman taught Torah in Bnei Berak. What does it mean, the grandchildren of Haman? That means they converted, and they, like this guy yesterday, converted. Bebnei Banav Shel Haman, and they taught Torah in Bnei Berak in the yeshivot. So you see what? You see that we can accept converts from Amalek. At least you see that according to Shitat Harambam. So the rabbi says, and it seems that once you convert them, they can marry into the Kahal. There's no restriction. Although we have restriction on Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab, it says they can convert, but they're not allowed to come into the Kahal ad olam. Which means even 10 generations, they can marry into each other. The question is, when it comes to Amalek, we have to eradicate them. Ammon and Moab, we don't have to eradicate. So you see, there's a chumrah by Amalek that's not by Ammon and Moab. And when it comes to Ammon and Moab, there's a chumrah that we cannot marry if they convert. But with Amalek, yes. How do you explain this contradiction? He says something very, very strong, although he doesn't bring it, this point, but it's based really on a derasha of the Ran, in his 11th derasha, derashot haran. The Ran says that, why did Avraham Avinu alav shalom, why was he so careful not to take a girl from Kena'an, for his daughter, and specifically wanted them to go to Betuel and Laban's house? Chaura zenevera vezeterefa. It's not like Abraham said, you know, don't go to Canaan, go to Bnei Berak, go to Mea Shearim, go to Williamsburg. He sent them to a place that was just as miserable as Canaan. Why was he satisfied, Abraham, to go there? And he said, there's a big difference between Canaan and Betuel. Canaan's fault and Pegam was in Midot, was in their nature, was in their personality. They were bad people by nature. Whereas Betuel and Laban, Hashkafa problems. Abu Nazara, the brain was messed up. The Ran says, somebody has bad hashkafot, if they're open-minded, you can talk them out of it. You can change them, teach them the right way, put the train back on the tracks again, and you get them back on course. But bad midot, as Rav Sheir Salanta said, to change even the smallest midara, it's easier to learn the entire shas. There's a saying in America, people don't change. And it's not that untrue. People unchange without working on themselves, which means if you think it's going to, midot is just going to change by learning and things like, no, you have to make a conscious effort to really change your midah. And kunai ve'ulai, you have to hope that even after all the work, that you'll be able to change even a small midah. But without working on yourself, it won't change. And therefore, midot are embedded. Midot of Canaan were bad, and therefore God, Abraham didn't want those genes of Canaan to come into Bnei Israel. Ammon and Moab, they had a fault in Midot. Meaning, Ammon and Moab, when we passed by their country, when we went in the Midbar, they didn't come out to greet us. Now, we didn't need them to greet us, it's not a greeting party, but they should have came out and at least sell us. When I ask you for a freebie, sell us food, provisions. They did not do that. They wanted the Jewish people to starve and to die of dehydration. They didn't know that we had the man and all this other stuff. They figured they'll pass by. They gave up so much profit as well. If each person would have bought a few dollars worth of sandwiches and a drink and a cookie, you get millions and millions of dollars. They weren't interested. Let them die. Okay, so you say, because of that, they're banned to come into Klal Yisrael forever. No, we're not banning them because they were anti-Semites. Because Amalek is also an anti-Semite. We don't ban somebody to come into Klal Yisrael because of anti-Semitism, because they hate Jews. But here, they didn't have Hakarat HaTov. After all, Ammon and Moab are children of Lot. And Avraham, our father, saved Lot from Sodom. They wouldn't have been alive if it wasn't for us. You don't have Hakarat HaTov. Not only don't have Hakarat, you're a Kafui Tov. That's Midot. God says, Midot, we don't want that to connect to Klai Yisrael. Because if that connects to Klai Yisrael, it can be pogem the personality of Klai Yisrael, and that's a problem. Where is Amalek? He hates. He has hatred. He hates. He fights God. Hashkafik. When he's fighting Bnei Yisrael, it says Velo Yare Elohim. Who's Lo Yare Elohim? Amalek. Where's Lo Yare Elohim? It's in here. So if you can get a good Amaleki, Shil Haman, you teach him Elohim, teach him the right way, you get it out of his system. And therefore, the midot are good. It's the hashkafot that are all messed up. So therefore, Avigdor said, a guy like that you can accept in the kahal. So as long as he's a kofir, but I kind of got to eradicate it because his hashkafot will destroy. However, if you can change him around, you'll be able to accept him as a gir. And therefore, Harambam's shita is that we do indeed accept gerim from Amalek. The last chedush that we said a lot of chedushim yesterday in the shiur ayin sham is what the Rav from Boston said. He said a big chedush. They claim, I saw after that, from his grandfather, Rav Chaim Brisker. But I'm not sure if Rav Chaim Brisker said this, but it's a big chedush. He holds that Amalek is not necessarily limited to one nation. Amalek is any nation that personifies the midot of Amalek, of anti-Semitism, of hatred of the Jews, of killing Jews. His shita is that even if the Germans are not Zera Amalek, meaning direct descendants, they have a din of Amalek, because they personify it what Amalek stands for. And he has ra'ayot, ra'ayah from Harambam. Interesting, the ayah from the Rambam that he has is Rambam in Hilchot Melachim, when he talks about the seven nations, Hiti, Emori, Girgashi, all those tzaddikim, when he talks about those guys in Eretz Yisrael, the nations, Rambam says that if you see any of them, you have a mitzvah to kill them. But then he writes at the end, Uchvar Avad Zichram. But we don't know who they are anymore. It's based on the Gemara Berachot that we learned, Basad Hiriv. However, in the next halakha, when he talks about Amalek, he does not write Uchvan Avad Zichram. Why not? If Sayyid Hanif came, he mixed everybody up. He mixed Amalek also. And the pshat is because it doesn't matter if you're a Zera of Amalek. They can still be around even if they're not actually directly descendants. And therefore, could be they're still around. So it could be the Germans. If you hold that they have a Zera of Amalek, and he brings an interesting Yerushalmi in Yevamot, the Yerushalmi in Yevamot is in Perek Bet Halacha Vav. Interesting Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Haman ben Amedata. The Gemara asks, Vichi ben Amedata aya? Was he the son of Medata? The Yerushalmi doesn't accept he was the son of Medata. The Gemara says, Ela Rotzeach ben Rotzeach. Just like Medata was a Rotzeach, Haman was a Rotzeach. So the Rav said, you see, according to the Yerushalmi, he wasn't even from Medata. He was Rotzeach ben Rotzeach. And they call him a din of Amalek. Behind the 75,000 people, the Jewish people killed that day. They checked their lineage. If he drove us from Amalek, they were behaving like Amalek. It's a tremendous hadush. But nonetheless, so you see from over here, Rabotai, back to our halakhic question, that those that accepted the reparations would clearly... Oh, so the Rav wants to say that even if you want to say that Amalek, maybe only the real Zera of Amalek you're not allowed to take money from. But the Ki'ilu Amalek, could be it's permissible. He made a diyuk. I know I'm going over time, but he made an interesting diyuk. I didn't say yesterday in Shi'ur, but it's interesting diyuk. If you look in Perashat, you have Beshalach and you have Ki Tetzer, right? Those are the two Perashiyot that talk about Amalek. What does it say in one of the Perashiyot? One of the Perashiyot, it says, Mahot Timche. In this week's Perashah, Mahot Timche Zecher Amalek. In Beshalach, it says, Milchama Lehashem. So he says there's a difference between Mahotim Heh and Milchama. When it comes to the real Amalek, the Zera, that's a deen of Mahotim Heh. Whereas in Parashat B'Shalah, it's talking about, you know, the other type of Amalek. They have a mitzvah to make a Milchama, but there's no deen of Mahotim Heh. Therefore, you can keep the Shalal by that Milchama. But by this one, you can't. Therefore, even if you want to say that they're not from Amalek, it would be permissible to take it. Again, but hashkafically, of course, that's something that's personal that each person had to judge on his own. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen. Amen. Amen.